You're listening to WWBC Coco Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco Rockledge and W264AS Rockledge Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we are also heard on the World Wide Wild.
Yes, that is wild.
You know, that wide. Is a Freudian slip.
That is, yeah.
It is a wild world, honestly.
It is a wild world.
Anyway, so take it away, Ellen.
That's
Tell
right.
our listeners how they can tune in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and this wild world.
That's right. 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive all of our shows. You can hit the on-demand button and pick any Monday. It's actually not done by, it's just done by date. And then we transfer all of those onto our social media and our websites, which is SitaMediaInc.com, so that that way you can see all the pictures and the bios of all of our guests and make sure that you can download all of those shows as well. So all of our guests are allowed to download those things and make sure that they're part of their social medias or their marketing as well.
I thought you were going to say a part of the wild world.
Wild world.
So how are we doing with the downloads? We're doing well?
Well, actually, our guest that we have first today was our first platform where we hit 18,000 downloads in a week, was because of Jennifer Carroll's last interview that we had. So as a result of that, we remain in that 18,000 to 21,000 downloads every week.
Well, thank God. That's,
thank goodness,
that's how
yes.
God works. He sends
Amen.
Wonderful people my way. You
that's
know?
Right.
So for our listeners who are tuning in today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, or maybe you're a repeat listener, on this show on Mondays from 1 to 2, we like to speak about what we call kitchen table topics, things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida, around the nation, and in the state of Florida as well. We speak to people about financial literacy, the environment, voting rights. We talk about people who want to be advocates for women's rights, people who want to advocate for clean air, water, sunshine, people who want to talk about education, opportunities, trade, whatever it is. We give you an opportunity to come on our show and understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And we give you a platform. Today's no different. Our very good friend, like Ellen just mentioned, my friend Jennifer Carroll, who was the former lieutenant governor for the state of Florida. I think she was the 18th lieutenant governor. She is a good friend of mine. She is also a fellow Trini. She was born and raised in the West Indies like I am. And she immigrated at the age of 8. I came at the age of 19. She's a former CEO of YOLO Limited, was a senior advisor of Global Digital Solutions and former president and CEO of the North American Custom Specialty Vehicles, Inc. Our second segment, we are going to be speaking with our good friend. He is a monk, and he is also a teacher and a speaker. He calls himself the Urban Buddhist Monk, and he provides guidance and teachings to all those who are seeking assistance and kindness. He also advises the Toronto Police Department, and his name is Mr. Banti Sarampella. He will be calling in second segment, and that's a perfect day for us because we are all watching the monks who are walking from Texas to Washington, D.C. With the little monk dog, and they are all walking for peace. So he'll be on second segment.
And what a perfect day on Martin Luther King's Day.
That's right. And my favorite quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And that's why we all do what we do, so that we can leave the world a kinder, gentler, more respectful and mindful world when we do. So, Jennifer, thank you for taking the time on Dr. Martin Luther King's Day to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. Happy New Year to both of you. Wishing you all great things, happiness, health, and prosperity.
Yes, and you know what? Ellen was just saying that, you know, when you came on our show years ago, how wonderful it was, because we also, it kind of made our show very credible as well, because, you know, it was early on, and then you came and you gave a speech here in Brevard about your book. And you know what? I just love the fact that we met, because there's so many times on planet Earth that good souls don't meet, and you and I met, and it's been such a wonderful friendship that I could count on you anytime.
I appreciate that. Yes, and that's why I'm here.
Yes,
you ask, and I said yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, bring us up to speed. I mean, you finished your stint at the governor's office, and then you went on to, now you're like me, lots of grandmothering, lots of mothering, and growing older, bolder, and wiser. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on.
Well, a number of things. People that are running for office seek my advice, and I give them the unvarnished truth.
Yes.
In running for office, because it's not easy, and particularly in the climate today, it's not about the difference in policy and ideology. It's about how can I demonize and destroy someone so I can have a better position to win. And unfortunately, the public respond to those negativism. And what we have to do is get away from that and peel the onion back to really see what is going on. And it just really bothers me to see America, the land that you and I have adopted as our home country, is just having all this turmoil every day. And I haven't put my finger on, is it truly widespread as the media is professing it to be? Or is it in specific areas that the media is exacerbating everything to just spool people up? And, you know, we talk about Dr. King when he was going about expressing to the greater public, it's about the greater good for society and how we should get along together and how we should bring peace and love and how we can bring some equity and enjoyment and fairness along the way. And it doesn't seem as, even our leaders, our public leaders, they're not really talking much about how we can come together and make it better for the public, how we can make it better for the people that elected us to office. It's more about pointing the finger about how somebody else is worse or bad. And then with social media now, it's just everybody is on a, I can't even say it's 24 cycle anymore. It's a 2 second cycle.
Right. So it's like everybody,
story.
Everybody and their mother and brother is now a political analyst.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
And it's never the positives. It's always the negatives that's getting the likes and a retweet and so forth, even if those negatives are false information. So when are we going to throttle back and say, let us have things saturated a little bit in our minds and to really see, in Trinidad we say, pick the sense out of the nonsense.
Right,
and
right.
And right now we're just talking about the nonsense a lot instead of the things that make sense.
Right, and you know what it is too? You know, it's like at the end of the day, right, everybody wants the same thing. They want a functioning microwave so they can heat some food up. They want air conditioning. They want a place to sleep, a job, healthcare, and they want to be able to live, not just survive. But, and you're right, how do we get there? And what we're watching is people who are elected into office, whether it's from the governor, state rep, school board, it's like everybody, before they even sit their butt down in the chair to help legislate, they're thinking about, when next can I get reelected? So it's like,
correct,
the fundraisers are starting. It's who you know. It's who you network with. It's who you can do a favor for. And that is so wrong, because most people who are elected, what they should be doing is putting people before politics. Forget about,
correct,
who is Democrat or Republican. I mean, for me, a person who is fiscally responsible and socially compassionate, I see the world as a vacation spot. And all of us are here for a reason. How do we get more people, Jennifer, to legislate for everyone? It doesn't matter who voted for them, but they should say, well, look, this person needs health insurance. This person, house insurance is too high. What can I do to help? How do we get more people to think that way?
Well, here's the thing, and it comes back to the voters. The voters need to really do their homework and not be in a celebrity or personality sort of contest. We have to, even those people that have been elected, and whether it's been 10, 15 years and they have name ID, look at that person's legislation. Look at that person's ability to move things and get it across the finish line that will that has benefited your community. And if that person has just been pointing fingers and blaming somebody else as to why they haven't been successful, then that person needs to be voted out of office. And then we also need to groom solid people that truly want good governance, that truly want a better communities, that truly want to do things and bring about policies that will enhance the taxpayer, enhance the citizens, enhance the communities. Those people with their ideas and willingness to work with other people. When I was in the state legislature, all of my bills that I passed 29 bills, two got vetoed by Governor Crist. But they all had unanimous support from both my Democrat and Republican colleagues. I also had co-sponsors on my bills that were Democrats. So it doesn't matter where a good idea is coming from. If it's good policy and good governance, we should be able to work together. And that's what the public needs to demand of their elected officials.
Yes. And, you know, oftentimes you hear politicians say, oh, my friend on the other side, my friend on the other side. And you wonder, really, truly, how can you be friends if you're fighting in the public and we're watching, right? But let's talk a little bit. You and I are both naturalized citizens. I came to the United States because back in the day, we all wanted to come. It was the place where you come for opportunities, education, and you could give back. And for me, it was, you know, I actually honored the words on the pledge. This is our nation now. This is where our grandchildren are born. This is where we are reborn. And the hot topic right now is ICE and immigration reforms. Now, I'm an advocate for people to come to the United States or any other country legally. But the question is, what do we do with the people who came and overstayed their visas? And you know, and I know, people do that, right? So what do we do going forward? How do we get those people or legislation passed in a humane way for these folks to either go back to their birth country, and do they go back with what they built here? I mean, it's a complex situation, right? How do we help people going forward?
I see, what has happened over the years is that for those that the immigrant population have benefited from, they have turned a blind eye. And we saw in the previous administration that any and everybody unvetted was able to come through the borders. People that are coming legally, like you and I, we didn't agree with that because there's a process. There's what you have to do is go through immigration. You have to fill out application. You have to demonstrate you are who you are. You have to get people to vouch for you, whoever it may be, your mother or your husband or whomever that is sponsoring you. Then you have to have the financial ability as well, not to come into the country and be a freeloader. And also to the health portion of it. In some places they will say, well, we have more measles that's popping up now among 5 and 6 year olds. Well, if that's the case, look at that population and see, did they come in illegally without getting their inoculation? Because when we came in, we had to get our vaccination and our medical.
It's a process, isn't it?
Before we came in.
Yes, it's a process.
So therefore, you know when who's coming in. They follow the rules, they follow the law, they've paid their application fees along the way, they've had their interview with immigration, and then you get your green card, and then you apply as time goes on, you apply for your naturalization. We cannot assume and say that because someone say they're coming from some place where their life is threatened. Many people's lives are threatened just going into Miami-Dade. you know, that threaten going into LA. So what is the threat here? And is it an assumption that we are supposed to take everybody? Well, if we take in everybody and people abuse the system, they're going into our education system, our healthcare system, our EBT card and so forth, that's coming from the taxpayers that's not privy to those same benefits. So what we need, they say we need immigration reform. What we need to do is to follow the rules, follow the laws, and abide by those. We allow millions of people to come into this country legally. And then the onset of the others that are coming illegally, where they may have nefarious intent to either cause harm, like all these other people that we're seeing that's pulled up by ICE, that they're child molesters and murderers and so forth. Why would we want those people to be in our country? At the time that they were having people come across our border, many of the other countries were opening up their prisons and letting those people come across on our side. Now the taxpayers have to fund this.
Right. And, you know, I think, well said, because sometimes, you know, we get into conversations with people about immigration reform, and you try to explain to them that there's actually a process to come legally, and you may have to wait, W-A-I-T. Like, we know lots of Trinidadians who had to wait. Now, it depends if the petitioner is a mother, a father, a spouse, whatever it is. I brought 20 people legally to the United States, and it took 17 years. But like you say, they had to get a police certificate of good character. They had to get all the proper shots, chest x-ray. They had to prove that they will not become a ward of the state when they come to the U.S. legally, yes. But how do we get people to understand that it doesn't matter where you live on God's magnificent planet, you've got to follow the law? Well, you and I are watching in our homeland where people are upset with following the law. You're driving on the roads, there are people driving, go to speed limit. You know, you have a vehicle that's not functioning properly, you can hit somebody. You know, what is it about following the law, my dear Jennifer Carroll, Florida's 18th lieutenant governor, for our listeners who are tuning in, what it is about following the law that people don't get?
They get it. But when you have leaders, our elected leaders, that are making excuses for people to not follow the law, that's where the rubber hits the road. Because if you as a parent, and you tell your kids not to do something, and then your husband say, okay, you can do it, and defend, you know, the undefensible, they're going to continue doing the undefensible. So what we need to do is to have our leaders, our elected officials, say, regardless of what party, regardless of what community, we need to make sure that these legislative leaders, they're the ones that enacted, they're the ones that created the laws, they voted for the laws. So why is it now that you either may have more voters if you feel it's going to help you get reelected, as you mentioned earlier, the next election is the most important election to the elected official. So if they see that if they speak out against following the law, then these people may not vote for them, but it should not be. It should be you're elected, you swore in a Bible to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will obey the laws, that you will provide the right guidance, and they're not doing that. And that's where we are having the issues in this country.
Just as a footnote, there's a lot of politicians right now that are sending out surveys and asking, you know, what laws would you like, you know, to update? And I think my comment on every one of them is we have laws on the books right now that we're not enforcing. So let's start enforcing the stuff that we already have, and then we can look at other things that might be falling through the cracks.
Well, absolutely. Just like they say, the gun laws. Every time there's a gun situation, we need more gun laws.
Yeah.
And we had at least 10 years ago, we had over 22,000 gun laws on the books.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have 22,000 gun laws on the books, at least at that time, I'm quite sure you have more now, and you still have an exacerbated situation where any anyone is able to get a gun. There's one time I was at a homeless shelter and doing feeding the hungry, and this one fella, he ran into the shelter and he says he needed some help, and the person was asking him some follow-on questions, and she says, do you have any weapons on you? He goes, I don't, I was traveling with it and I hid it. And she goes, where'd you hide it? And he wouldn't disclose where he hid it, but he says he didn't want somebody to meet up with him because he had the gun, the weapon. This is a guy that is homeless, that you think that he's following any of those laws?
No.
And if the homeless shelter at that time wasn't open or the facility wasn't there for him to get to, would he have committed a crime with that gun with this person that was following him? More than likely, yes.
Yes.
So we have to
hold people accountable. I think there are people in our government, from local to state to federal, that, like you say, they do try to bend and twist things to their own advantage. But I actually had a Republican friend come up to me recently and said, what is it about certain Democrats that they encourage people to break the law? And I said, examples. And, you know, they talked about, stuff that are happening, with ICE. And they talked about what happened in Detroit when people were burning down people's businesses and stuff. And what I want to say is, it's not good for any political party to be seen as though they're swaying people to disobey. I mean, you and I grew up with the Trinidad and Tobago Pledge, where, and I don't know if the people do it anymore, but we said it every day and we listen to those in authority. And yes, if you're stopped by a police officer, I do believe if you are respectful, they would respect you as well. But we're seeing now where people feel it's okay to disrespect those in authority. Now, we're not saying if somebody in authority is disrespecting you, that you should let yourself be disrespected. We're saying just follow the law. So why is it that some state representatives and some people in certain political parties are being seen as though they are not encouraging folks to follow the law?
Well, it hypes their persona. It hypes them to be on the media, because the media is going to put these people front and center. So when the media always leads with what bleeds. And so if an individual, from the time they're getting stopped by law enforcement, they know better. They know they're supposed to follow lawful order, but they will refuse, and then they'll put on a camera, and then somebody will have a camera, a video taking of the situation, and then that's where the media put it. Look how bad the police officers are. Look how bad this is, and look how bad that is. And they never go back and say, why did this individual not listen? Why did this individual speed? Why does this individual did not pull aside when given a lawful order to do so? And encourage the community that the responsibility is on them to follow the rules, to follow the law. You don't hear that in the media. The media always goes on the perpetrator side to defend them, and then when the elected official come out and say, oh, we need justice for this person, they get the head time, they get the face time on the TV, and then that advances their persona. And again, it goes back to that getting reelected. So what does the community say? This person fights for me. Well, if this person fights for you, this person will be doing like Dr. King. This person will be encouraging you and the community to get a better education, to bring about economic advancements in your community, to bring about safety and security in your community, to advance the trajectory of these individuals, these young people coming out of school to either go into their business or go into a trade school or go to college, and making sure that those are the things that we're advancing out to communities.
And be nonviolent.
Videos.
And most important, be nonviolent. So Jennifer, for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with Jennifer Carroll. She was the 18th Lieutenant Governor for the state of Florida and a former state rep. She's also a political analyst, and she's appeared on One America News Network, NPR, Comcast News, CNN, C-SPAN. You know, when you were in the Lieutenant Governor, you encouraged and led a lot of successful trade missions to Trinidad and Tobago. You also was the chairperson for the Economic Development Policy Committee. You did a lot of stuff. You spearheaded a campaign to raise funds for the WW2 Memorial. And I really admire you so much because you did a lot for small businesses as well. In today's world, we're watching, you know, how women have to juggle so much traditionally. They have to interrupt their careers to manage small businesses. And then there's a lot of family responsibilities. How does woman in today's world manage owning a business and juggle the responsibilities of a family?
Well, God built us differently, didn't he?
He sure. I think if men had to give birth, we wouldn't have any children.
But the thing about it that women make do. And we know how to juggle and manage multifaceted things. So I'm glad you brought up about small businesses because the small business women organizations across the state and the country seldom get the level of financial support necessary to truly help small business women, the businesses are small for women to grow and advance to the next level. Even at the Chamber of Commerce and so forth, the emphasis is not really on helping more women in growing their business to advance to the next level. And we do have in the state of Florida a small business funding, I should say, for women businesses. But again, anytime you look at, even though the monies for the state of Florida have grown exponentially for the amount of money is collected from the sales tax and everything else, much of that money does not trickle down into helping small businesses. And not to say that they get free money, but at least grants and loans and dedicated form of finance to help these businesses expand and move to the next level.
Yeah. I kind of wish you were still there, but you're doing so much better than before because you are able to give such great advice and people can judge or they don't have to judge, but you've done well afterwards. So, you know, there's, you and I come from a background and so many of us where if you have 2 foot and 2 hand, you go to work, right? Mm-hmm, what happened in the United States of America that so many people feel like they're entitled to live on what's called welfare and for generations and generations to stay with it. And then when a politician comes along and says, hey, we're stopping that. After 3 months, if you can't catch yourself, something wrong with you. You have 2 arms and 2 legs and there's a help wanted sign out there. Go get yourself a job. What happens? Because good politicians get a bad name when they say, listen, enough is enough. You've been on it for a few years. It's time you get off of it.
Well, Dr. Martin Luther King taught us all that work serving humanity has dignity and worth. And he urged people to perform jobs, big or small, with excellence and pride. You know, he gave a reference to a paint like Michelangelo painted or Shakespeare wrote, because he said meaningful labor uplifts society and deserves respect. So, and we'll be reflecting on Dr. King today. Dr. King wasn't about staying in welfare forever and a day. That is not the pathway to building success and financial hierarchy of making sure that your family is able to build financial wealth. And what we need to do, we have demonized going to work. You know, when they want to make the entry of work, the minimum wage, as high as somebody that has worked 20 years or 15 years into a company, now you're stifling the ability for business to grow. When you look at a business, if you're forking out over 40% of your revenue to employees, you really don't have much to expand
and
revenue
grow.
Left over to expand your business and grow.
Yeah.
So therefore, you stifle or you close. So what people have to realize and understand, there's a way for entry. An entry level should be, I'm going to work harder to get to the next level so I can help this business prosper and grow. And even in doing so, I could possibly take over this business or learn enough to go out and create my own business model so that I can now be prosperous financially. But when we've made the system so easy that it's, you're making more money to stay home and have extra babies, and the taxpayers are giving you money for, and then if you designate your children to have ADD or something else, you get additional monies on top of that, then what's the incentive to get up every day and go to work? If
yeah.
the money is coming into my checking account on a regular and I don't have to do anything. So we disincentivize the work.
Yeah, and you know, it's like everybody and their brother and mother wants free money for something that they perceive their family or their children have. And you're right. They're getting that money directly deposited into their checking account. So it's almost like you're getting paid for doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so...
And what they have to realize is that this money is not coming out of a machine from the federal government. The machine are the people that's getting up and going to work every day paying taxes. And if you look to get some of those same benefits, you would not be able to, although you're paying into the system.
Correct. And well, and you know, sometimes I feel really bad because immigrants get blamed a lot for welfare or welfare fraud or whatever. And yeah, there are some people that do it. But for the most part, I've yet to meet an immigrant from Trinidad and Tobago that's not working. They come here legally with their green cards and right away they start working because we were taught that every day you wake up is a good day. Use your two hands, use the brain God gave you. And work. My mother used to say that when you earn an honest shilling, that's God giving you the guidance to do that. So I don't understand. Like, you tell me if you think, like, what is it about the immigrant population that sometimes they carry that blame that they're just taking too much? When I do feel like immigrants do work hard and contribute a lot to the United States.
Well, immigrants don't only have one job either. They usually tend to have more than my parents used to have two and three jobs at the same time. My dad used to clean offices in the nighttime when he was finished as a dental technician, and I would be with him going into the offices in the evening to help clean up as a child. But the thing about it is that I don't know about all immigrant population, but certainly from the Trinidadian ones, we wanted to create a better opportunity than our parents want to have a better opportunity for their kids than they had. So it's always about how can we work and put aside and save and have a better life and create a better life. But the thing about it is that not everybody is built the same. And usually when, for example, if you're a smart kid in school and you're getting good grades and then a teacher saying, well, this one is doing so well and why can't you, Johnny, be just as good as Billy here? Billy is doing his homework. Then they're going to beat up on Billy because they don't want to do their homework and they don't want to look bad. So when people look at, well, that population, they're taking away our jobs. Well, if that's the case, why do we have so many positions open and available? Nobody's taking away anybody's job because you're not doing the job right now. So if you wanted to work, you can get out there and do a work. And also, too, one thing people have to understand is that if the work that you used to do that you can no longer do, retool yourself, reschool yourself, getting to something else that's employable today or will be valuable in the future. Don't just sit there and say, well, I can't get hired because I used to be a logger and they don't have logging anymore. Well, you can do many other things and you could retool your brain and retrain and get that skill set if you truly want to work in the market of today.
Right. And also, you know, one of the things about immigrants too, there's a lot of guidance in immigrants' household. You have the grandma, the auntie, the cousins, the parents, everybody's on the same page to buck up. Everybody is telling the kid, hey, you want to play video games? You do that after homework is done. Go read a book. Everything for me growing up was go read a book.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you have extra time, go read a book. No jumping around. Watch who you hang with. They would tell you, don't hang your hat where you can't reach it. Show me your friends and I'll tell you who you were. They will tell you nothing good comes after dark. What happened to all those things? Because that still more so applies today than any other time period.
Well, most definitely. And kids have too much idle time. Even adults have too much idle time, particularly the social media. I try not to, get into involved in that too much. Yeah, look, but when you look, if you see the amount of time that people have looking down and bending down on their phone, on their phones and their social media devices, that takes up so much of your time that you never get back. So what people need to do is just a deep plug. And say, I'm not going to watch. And then it's not even bringing it much positive into your life. Most of it is about negative. Some of it is funny. But you can say, instead of 4 hours watching this or 8 hours watching this stuff, let me read something that's going to pour something positive into me or pour some knowledge into me that I didn't know before. And you wouldn't believe how many of these young people nowadays that don't know the basics of things that we adults take for granted. It's our responsibility to teach them. For example, doing your chores. Some kids may say, what are chores? Taking out the trash, making your bed, helping out to cook. The young ladies probably don't even know much about cooking anymore. They go and they buy something that they stick in the microwave for 15 seconds or something or other, as opposed to preparing a meal. So there's the simple things that we need to get back to, the basics in life, so that we can have that structure built in for all the other things that we do.
Yes. Well, you know, we have 30 seconds left for this segment for you. And I wanted to ask you in 30 seconds or less, can you tell our listeners here, Jennifer Carroll, about your military career and why it's imperative that people do look at that as a career as well?
Almost definitely. And they can go to my website at jennifercarroll.com and see my military career there. But it brings about leadership. It brings about a camaraderie that you will have there. Many people that served within the military 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that still look me up and tell me, you know, commemorate about the things that we've done. As a matter of fact, I was given the award of I just lost my train of thought of.
Military, your service, military service.
It's just
dead air time.
Veterans
there
Hall of Fame. I was inducted into the Veterans Hall of Fame. Thank you.
Dead time on radio.
For my
was
military
like, oh.
service in the state of Florida. Yes.
Yes. Well,
that. And we will make sure that we share all of that information. We are just so honored, Jennifer, that you're calling in and letting us just. That kind of pick your brain a little bit about what's going on.
She's a friend, with a capital F. We'll keep her.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we'll make sure we share all this great info today. Thanks again for calling in. We're going to get to our next guest, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Be blessed. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture. Located in Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny, it's sunny, but it's cold.
It's cold.
Coco, it's almost feel like winter. What we'll be talking to Bunty in a minute about that. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 100.7, and we're also heard online everywhere. And we're going to go right to our second guest. His name is Bunty Sarampella. He is a monk. He's a teacher. He's a speaker. And he calls himself the Urban Buddhist Monk. He lives in Canada. He offers guidance and knowledge and seek assist for anyone who is seeking assistance. And he also advises the Toronto Police. And he's on the phone. Bunty, thank you so much for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
It is a great joy to be here with you, Sita. And I think we are going to have some wonderful time for 15, 20 minutes.
Well, I tell you, I just, you know, on Martin Luther King Day, to have someone such as yourself who is trying so hard to promote peace and make a world a better place for everyone and to leave a world a better place. You know, you left us with some wonderful words last time. You said we need a kinder, gentler, more mindful world. So bring our listeners up to speed onto what is going on in your world. You've also written another book. You've traveled extensively. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we start talking about the historical journey of the Walk for Peace.
Yeah, thank you, Sita. As you said, I live in Toronto, Canada, and I have been a Buddhist monk since age 10. And so now I have been a monk for 43 years. So as a monk, and of course, I love the world, and I would like to see the people living in peace and harmony. So with this in mind, I have introduced the principle to the world. It's called the kindfulness, and which comes from two words, kindness and mindfulness. But I'm teaching the world to practice or embrace kindfulness in two steps. So first step is be mindful to be kind to yourself, and the second step is be mindful to be kind to others. And I strongly believe being kindful, and if we can practice kindfulness, and if we can put this the kindfulness principle into practice in day-to-day life, and it would not only heal us, it will also heal the world.
Oh, and my gosh, yes, yes.
A peaceful and harmonious world, and I believe this is the way to go. And with this in mind, I published a book 2 years ago, and the title of the book is called Are You Kindful? So I think people can read the book, and I'm doing a lot of stories and sharing some kindfulness steps, how you can practice it, and how you can make your life peaceful, happy, healthy, harmonious, and how you can bring the hope of peace, happiness, compassion, love to the world.
Yeah, you just gave me three great words there: healthy, happy, and harmonious. HHH. Yes. So yeah. you said you've been a monk for 43 years, but you look like you're 23. So you'll have to share your beauty secrets with us. So, you know, I was on your Facebook page, and I was witnessing history, such a historical journey for the Walk of Peace, where these monks are walking for, what, I think 23,000 miles from Texas, and they plan to reach Washington, D.C., and 2,300 miles, and they plan to reach Washington, D.C. So tell us a little bit about what do you think is the purpose of the Walk of Peace?
Well, I have been watching them right from the beginning. In fact, I have seen the leader monk, Venerable Panyakara, together with other monks, doing the same walk for peace in Vietnam, Sri Lanka, India, now in the United States. And this is the walk for peace is not just a physical journey, and I believe it is a spiritual pilgrimage, a living message of hope, healing, and the human unity. So the monk, Venerable Panyakara, is teaching everyone each mindfulness step should be the peace, not something we wait for. It is something we practice. This in mind, he actually was giving some wonderful teachings, and I can, if you like, I can summarize those teachings into 10 steps. So the first step is peace begins with you. So the true peace does not start in the world. It starts in our own heart. When the mind is calm and the heart is kind, peace naturally spreads to families, communities, and nations. So the second teaching he's giving, walk mindfully and live mindfully. Every step was a reminder to be fully present when we walk, eat, speak, or work. With mindfulness, we transform ordinary life into a sacred practice. And the third teaching he's giving, that is the kindfulness kindness heals the world. Kindness is not weakness, it is strength. A kind heart can soften anger, heal wounds, and build bridges where walls once stood. And the fourth teaching he's giving, nonviolence is the highest courage. The
yes.
monks showed that true bravery is not in harming others, but in choosing patience, forgiveness, and compassion, even in difficult times.
Yes.
And the fifth teaching he's giving is a calm mind is a safe home. When the mind is agitated, the world feels dangerous. When the mind is peaceful, even challenges become manageable. So meditation is learning to come home to ourselves. So he's heavily using the mindfulness practice and encouraging people to do mindful breathing and loving kindness meditation.
Yes, and it seems as though by simply walking, just walking, they are allowing their presence to become a message that right now so many people really are longing for, that calm and that understanding of peace.
Yeah, I think, Sita, this is what people are lacking, I believe, around the world. And if people want peace, people are thinking about peace, but there is no any action taken by people. You know, people are just hurting one another, each other, and there are a lot of violence. People are living in pain and suffering. And so this monk, Venerable Panyakara, actually told the journalist a few times that he saw this suffering of people during the COVID time. And he was there to help everyone. And he really saw the suffering of the world. And he realized the fact that if he remains in the community, he's able to help only the few people. So to create an awareness of the world's suffering and why we need peace and harmony, so he started walking around the world, starting from Vietnam to Sri Lanka to India, now to the United States. And he did not actually tell the world, I'm doing this to convert people. I don't want people to become a Buddhist or Buddhist monk, but we are human beings. And so to create such an awareness, and he just started walking with a group of monks from Fort Worth, Texas, to Washington, D.C. And a few weeks, actually, people did not pay attention. It was after an accident which caused one of the monks to lose his left leg. and then he got amputated, and then it was in the news, and then people realized suddenly, my goodness, this lungs are actually walking for
Yeah, I saw that, and I said, you know, I said to myself, wow, it's going to take something as tragic as him losing his leg while walking for peace for CNN to pick it up and other news outlets. And what he's teaching us by having that leg amputated after that tragic accident on the road, he's actually teaching us that pain and recovery and forgiveness now walk alongside with faith, and he's turning that suffering into courage and compassion.
Yeah, that's what they, you know. We are not here to hurt anyone. We don't want to hate anyone. We just want to practice forgiveness. We just want to practice patience. We just want to practice the kindness, love, and compassion. And I think this is such a great effort that they made to bring this message of tolerance, message of love, message of kindness, message of kindfulness, a message of goodwill. And I think people, just by seeing these monks walking on the street, you know, people are becoming emotional. People are just crying. People are just bringing their kids to the streets to witness this, you know, and they are documenting their journey by taking pictures and videos. And whenever the monks gather at a place for rest or for lunch or breakfast, there we see thousands of people gathering around just to get a glimpse of these walking monks.
And they're very quiet. They're very respectful of the monks as well. Yeah. But, you know, I was hoping by watching the monks walk and create an atmosphere of spirituality and kindfulness and mindfulness, I was hoping that in today's world where we see so much racism and bigotry and fear instilled by other humans who believe they are superior to others, I was hoping that just by the monks showing up, that it would help people to see that today is Dr. Martin Luther King's Day. And I want people to see that no one should be judged by the color of their skin, but by their character. And the monks have character. They have presence. So how do we, you know, segue that into that we are all the same. We breathe the same. We walk the same. We think the same. Our heart is on the same side of our body. How do we help other people who were raised to believe that they are superior to others to say, you know, we are not, that we're all just one. We're just different in the way we look.
This is why I think there is the teaching, ancient teaching. It is called everybody suffers. And so it is the duty of every human to be there for those who are suffering and to free them from suffering and wishing them happiness. You know, we are just human beings, and we are not superior or inferior, but we are just human beings. So as good human beings, and I think we should have the value, the special virtue, wishing happiness to everyone. And so may all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. And I think if we can educate the people, I mean, I think that's the very reason why even I have undertaken the mission of spreading kindfulness. That's why I'm saying, first of all, be kind to yourself. And secondly, be kind to others. You don't know what they are going through. Every person has a struggle. Every person is going through something, a painful story, painful something. So if you can be there for them with a heart full of love and compassion, kindfulness, that will not only alleviate their pain, pain and suffering, and it will also bring hope for wisdom, for light, for positive things. So I think this is the way to practice these principles, and if we can put them into daily practice, and if we are happy, and then we can spread the happiness. First
yeah.
of all, we must be mindful. There's a beautiful metaphor I can give you. Let's say you're holding the fire or the heated iron bar. When you keep holding it, you are in pain, you're suffering. You can't hold it anymore. So when it becomes unbearable, then you just throw it around.
Yeah, so, and I think Bhakti, one of the things that the Walk of Peace is showing us too is that true change does not come through anger and noise.
Yeah.
True change arrives quietly through consistent and mindful action, one step
yeah.
at a time, and it teaches us that peace begins with us. But, you know, I saw something you had posted a long time ago, and I loved it. And I wanted to share it with our listening audience here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And this is something I had seen that Bhante Sarampella, our friend, the urban monk who's calling in from Canada, had posted. It says, sunlight isn't expensive. Depression is. Healthy food isn't expensive. Obesity is. Saving isn't expensive. Debt is. Knowledge isn't expensive. Ignorance is. Gratitude isn't expensive. Envy is. And peace isn't expensive. Ego is. And I love that because it kind of tells us what Buddhism is all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's why I think Buddhism is all about the happiness. It's all about the peace. It's all about kindness and compassion. And I think the very first principle of Buddhism is to refrain from hurting others, other beings, refraining from killing other beings. Instead of anger, instead of hatred, cultivate loving kindness, compassion, goodwill. And so Buddhism is also about not fixing others. It is all about fixing oneself. Now, if we, you know, Sita, you would love this. There is a book written by an American psychiatrist in the 1960s, and the title of the book is called "I Am Okay, You Are Okay."
Yeah, so, I read that book 100 times.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you who. And I'll tell you with the last 30 seconds left, who's okay is Aloka, that rescue dog that they're taking with them on the walk. He's got a Facebook page with thousands of followers now.
Right.
People are turning up to see him as well.
Yeah, and I think Aloka also became the light for the world. He became the hope for everyone. And you know, it's a very fascinating story, like how this stray dog in India followed these monks, and eventually they followed him up to Bodhgaya, long distance. And so this monk was kind enough to bring him to the United States, and he made him become American citizen.
Yeah, he met him in India, I read.
Well, where can we follow the monk's trail of peace and the walk of peace?
And his website.
And your website
and your
as well.
Yeah. So they have official social media pages. In Facebook, they call Walk for Peace. And also in Instagram and in TikTok, and they are posting the pictures and videos and giving constant daily updates of the monks and how where they are heading to. And I think right now they're in North Carolina.
Yep. And what's your website? And what's your website for people to follow you?
People can follow me on social media, Urban. The Bhante Sarampella in Facebook and LinkedIn, also Bhante Sarampella, and the Instagram, Urban Buddhist Monk. And I have my own website, it's called urbanbuddhistmonk.org. And also, I have my mission website. It is called CanadaAMindfulNation.ca.
Well, we will make sure we share. Yeah, we'll make sure we share all of that on all of our social medias as well as our website as well, which is cedamediainc.com. You know, two great messages today from Jennifer Carroll and from our friend here. You know, go in curiosity, not in judgment, right? Ask a lot of questions. If you don't know something, don't get angry about it. Get question and make sure that
and
you stay
kind.
Relevant
Most
and
important,
be kind. Absolutely. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on 1510 WWBC. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.